Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, President Trump about to formally launch his 2020 campaign. As new polls show, some issues for Trump. Senator Bernie Sanders, who says he's the best candidate to take on the president, is out front this evening. Plus, the president's nominee for defense secretary out, his nod derailed amid shocking revelations of domestic violence. How did the president not know? And a photographer comes face to face with a gunman as he's shooting up a federal building. What made him take pictures instead of running the other way? Let's go out front. Good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, the breaking news. President Trump about to formally launch his 2020 campaign. These are live pictures out of Orlando, Florida, where already the Trump family has been taking the stage. Eric Trump and Don Jr. have just spoken. Vice President Pence about to speak. Everybody there. And in moments, Trump will join them, addressing a revved up crowd. Trump picking Florida, his second home, as a must-win battleground state. He only carried Florida by about a percentage point in 2016. And tonight, he is trailing some of the top Democratic candidates in Florida. Quinnipiac today, showing Joe Biden leads President Trump 50-41%, Bernie Sanders 48-42%, Elizabeth Warren 47-43%, just outside the margin of error, the others all within it. Now, before the president left for Orlando, he spoke about tonight's event.
I'm going down, as you know, to a very big crowd down in Florida, Orlando.
Caitlin Collins is traveling with the president. She is out front. She is in Orlando right now. All right, Caitlin, there you are getting ready for the president to come to that podium and the vice president. Why Florida?
Well, Erin, as you noted, this is a state that is near and dear to the president. It's essentially his second home, but also he knows that this is a state he's got to win in 2020. And the president, by judging what our sources have been telling us, has been rattled by those polls that have showed him trailing people like Joe Biden in states like Florida. So that is why you're seeing the campaign pick this as what they are calling the launch of their reelection bid, even though, of course, the president has been running for office since the day he was inaugurated. They're billing this as something new. They've had concerts going on outside during the day. There have been people lined up since yesterday. And it even almost has this convention-like feel with all of the president's family coming out on stage here tonight before he does, and especially the Vice President Mike Pence as well. But Erin, the question is, what is the president going to say tonight as he makes his case to voters for why they should put him back in office for four more years? And to give you a hint of what he's going to say, it could be the same playbook he used in 2016. That's judging from what the president was tweeting overnight when he was threatening to deport millions of undocumented immigrants starting next week, even though his administration wasn't able to give a lot of details on that. So the president is coming here hoping in the recent weeks, as there's been tension in his campaign over those leaked polls, to be comforted by this arena full of 20,000 of his chanting supporters.
All right, Caitlin, thank you very much. And now I want to go to 2020 Democratic presidential candidate, Senator Bernie Sanders. And Senator, I appreciate your time tonight. President obviously getting ready to go on stage there in Orlando, launch his campaign. You're planning to deliver a live response to his event tonight. What will you say?
Well, I'm going to make a guess, and maybe I am wrong. But here's what my guess is in terms of what the president will not talk about tonight. I have the feeling he's not going to talk about the fact that he tried to throw 32 million Americans off of the health care they have. He's not going to talk about the fact that in his recent budgets, he proposed massive cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and to Social Security. He probably won't talk about his tax reform bill, where he promised the American people that it would not benefit the wealthy. And in fact, 83% of the benefits over a 10-year period go to the top 1%. And let me make another prediction. I bet he doesn't talk about climate change, which the scientific community calls the greatest threat facing our planet. So those are some of the things he won't talk about. What he will talk about, I am sure, are undocumented people in this country and demagogue that issue.
And those are the issues you focus on later on tonight. Look, he, I don't know if you just heard the reporting there, Senator, but part of the reason he's in Florida is because, well, he likes going there a lot, but he is concerned about the polling data there. We all know he cares deeply about polls. He's watching them closely, whether he admits it or not. And he's losing in Florida, according to the Quinnipiac poll, to you, to Joe Biden. Joe Biden talked about polls today, and he said, quote, there's a target on my back, referring to other Democrats. Is that fair? Are you aiming for Joe Biden right now?
Not a target on anybody's back. I mean, I think the good news is that virtually all of the recent national polls has Biden and myself way ahead of President Trump, in some cases, double digits. And I think that's good. But, you know, this is, you know, a long, long time before an election, so we shouldn't put too much credibility into polls. But I think Trump understands that he's beginning to panic a little bit, that he is in trouble, that his agenda, his personality, his racism and his sexism and his overall bigotry is not what the American people feel comfortable with.
So Senator Elizabeth Warren, as you know, has been rising in the polls. It's been getting a lot of notice, right? And in the Florida poll, you and she are locked in a close race for second. You're at 14. She is at 12. Biden advisors tell CNN they're keeping a close eye on her rise, but they think that it's coming, her rise is coming from you. So every point she gets comes out of your number, not his number. Warren's gain coming at your expense, Senator Sanders?
Aaron, you sound like somebody in the media, you know? This is not to me what's important. I got to run my campaign. Senator Warren will run her campaign. And I think what the evidence will show is that I am, in fact, the strongest candidate to defeat Trump. I think we can win big in Michigan and Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania. And I think we'll win because the issues that we are fighting for are issues that the working families of this country will respond to.
Yeah.
Many of these disastrous trade policies. I opposed the war in Iraq. I opposed the Wall Street bailout. And I think people in the Midwest and all over this country will agree with me.
What I'm curious, the reason I asked the question, though, is that I'm wondering whether you think there's a cap on support from the progressive left, right? That there's only so much. So
that's a fair question. But let me respond in this way. And I think often the media gets it wrong. If you are a working person and you're working longer hours for low wages and you can't afford prescription drugs, you can't afford to send your kid to college, you're worried about your parents, or you're worried about your own retirement, are you necessarily a liberal or a progressive? You're not. You're just one of the majority of the American people who are living paycheck to paycheck, who are, you know, really struggling in this economy. So I think, you know, my universe of support are the vast majority of working people who are getting screwed over by the economy. The truth is that for the last 45 years, the average American today has not seen a nickel more in real wages than he or she got 45 years ago. That's pretty crazy. And meanwhile, there's been a massive transfer of wealth from the working families of this country to the top 1%. Now, you don't have to be a liberal or a progressive to understand that. All you do understand is that in the richest country in the world, you are entitled to a decent standard of living.
So you said you're going to be talking about immigration. He's going to be talking about immigration tonight as well in a different way. You tweeted today calling his threat to deport millions of undocumented immigrants, right, which he said he's going to start doing next week, outrageous. But I wanted to ask you about something else that came from someone who you have obviously shared a lot in common with, Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She talked about the president's detention of migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border, particularly where some of these people are being housed. And here's how she described it.
The United States is running concentration camps on our southern border. And that is exactly what they are. They are concentration camps.
Senator, you have talked about how your father's family was wiped out in the Holocaust. 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. Concentration camps mass murdered them and others in gas chambers. Are you comfortable calling detention of migrants on the Mexican border concentration camps?
I didn't use that terminology. You know, and again, I have a lot of respect for Alexandria. I think she's doing a fantastic job. What I will tell you
is that we are locking up children in deplorable conditions. I mean, keeping kids there for weeks in places that are not meant for kids, where children are being traumatized. And that is absolutely unacceptable. We need in this country comprehensive immigration reform. We need to deal with the 1.8 million young people in DACA and get them legal status. And we need to move toward a citizenship, a path toward citizenship.
But you don't use the word concentration camps.
No, I have not used that word. I have not used that word.
Before we go, Senator, I want to ask you about Iran, which I know you are speaking out on. You said earlier today that you don't accept the administration's claim that Iran was behind the attacks on two oil tankers in the Gulf of Oman.
What I said is that that attacks on oil tankers need to be thoroughly investigated. And that's what we need. I also said, and repeat right now, that the worst foreign policy errors in the modern history of this country came when we got into the war in Vietnam, when we were lied to, the American people were lied to about the so-called Gulf of Tonkin, and when we were lied to about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And right. I think the American people should be very, very careful about taking anybody's point of view in terms of
Iran. I completely hear your point. I'm just curious because obviously, Pompeo has said the CIA concluded that, and there's been nothing to refute that they concluded that. The CIA also, of course, concluded that the Saudi crown prince was responsible directly for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. So do you also think that one deserves investigation like the president is doing, or do you accept the CIA in one case and not the other?
You know, Aaron, what does the owner, the Japanese owner of the tanker, say?
They say enough evidence produced by the U.S.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the owner of the tanker. I don't know that they have any particular motive for coming up with that position. They don't agree with what Trump said. All that I'm saying is you need an independent investigation. And this is what I will also say, is that I happen to believe that if the United States went to war against Iran, attacked Iran, it would be an horrific mistake. It would make the war in Iraq look like a cakewalk. And I will do everything that I can, A, to prevent that war, and B, we need the American people to tell Trump that he does not have the constitutional authority to go to war. That is the responsibility of the Congress, not any president.
All right. Senator Sanders, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And next, Trump's nominee for defense secretary resigning amidst revelations of violent domestic incidents. Why is this all coming to light now? Plus, Anthony Scaramucci is out front. Does he believe it's okay for the president to chastise his own chief of staff on camera for coughing?
Let's do that over. He's coughing in the middle of my answer.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like that,
And the president threatening raids, deportation for millions of undocumented immigrants next week. Why didn't he bother to tell the people who would be doing these raids about it? New tonight, shocking details of domestic violence involving Patrick Shanahan's family, derailing his nomination to be Secretary of Defense. Shanahan dropping out of consideration and resigning as the acting defense secretary amid particularly disturbing revelations that his son beat his own mother with a baseball bat. Drew Griffin is out front.
Just days ago, as questions swirled about delays with his FBI background check, Patrick Shanahan seemed confident he would become Secretary of Defense.
I'm in contact with the White House, done with our paperwork, expect to have the process completed here shortly. And I'm right now, as you can see, kind of focused on doing the job.
Today, with a tweet, President Trump announced Shanahan was done.
He said it's going to be a rough time for him.
Allegations of domestic violence between Shanahan, his ex-wife, and their son derailed his nomination. Shanahan's terrible divorce dragged on more than 5 years, a story of a troubled family spelled out in hundreds of pages of court documents. A 2010 incident at their home would be the last time the husband and wife ever spoke, Shanahan's ex-wife told CNN. According to Seattle police, Kimberly Shanahan said Patrick struck her several times in the stomach, but the officer noted that Patrick had a black eye and a bloody nose and that Kimberly had no injuries and no marks consistent with her version of being assaulted. Police arrested Kimberly Shanahan on an assault charge that night. Her husband requested the charges against her be dropped. In another violent episode in 2011, it was one of the couple's sons involved in a baseball bat attack against his own mother, leaving her with a bloody head wound, fractured elbow, fractured skull, and multiple strikes to the torso. Kimberly Shanahan says in court documents, Patrick Shanahan excused the behavior of their son, saying Mr. Shanahan has taken the position that I provoked the assault. In fact, Patrick Shanahan did send a memo about the incident to his ex-wife's brother, saying that his son acted in self-defense and that Will's mother harassed him for nearly 3 hours before the incident. She fueled the situation by berating him repeatedly in his room. Shanahan later said in court filings that he wrote that to help plan for his son's legal defense. There is no excuse for what Will did to his mother. Will's actions were unquestionably wrong, but I am his father and love him unconditionally. Shanahan, who thanked his children during his confirmation hearing as Deputy Defense Secretary.
I'd like to acknowledge my three children who have accompanied me here today, Kayla, Will, and Jack, who are seated behind me.
Today said it's because of them he pulled his name out. He released a statement saying, I believe my continuing in the confirmation process would force my three children to relive a traumatic chapter in our family's life and reopen wounds we have worked years to heal.
And Aaron, Kimberly Shanahan, who now goes by the name Kimberly Jordanson, told me today FBI agents only recently came to her home and asked about that 2010 police incident and allegations of domestic violence. CNN has found no evidence Patrick Shanahan ever physically abused his ex-wife. She, however, has been arrested in Seattle in 2010 for assaulting her husband. Charges were dropped. Arrested again in 2014, charged with smashing a former business partner's car with a sledgehammer. She wasn't convicted there. And two of her three children released statements today saying their mother was abusive, violent, and abused alcohol and drugs. Aaron Kimberly Jordanson says that is not true and tells me her family lies about her. Aaron?
All right, Drew. Thank you. And now David Gergen, advisor to four presidents. I mean, David, look, this is terrible in many awful ways. Shanahan's son charged with two felonies. And just to be clear, so people understand the severity of this, he faced up to 15 years in prison. The judge, in fact, wouldn't even release him out of custody, saying the crime scene pictures where he beat his mother so viciously were horrendous. That's the word from the judge. Shanahan, of course, defended his son at the time. Now says that nothing could excuse that. How is it possible that the Senate did not know these details?
I don't think it is possible. Well, first of all, I think we all share and feel in great sympathy for the members of the family, especially
yes.
that this all might come public. But the story doesn't add up that so far. Listen, when his name was put up for deputy secretary, that launched an investigation of his background. He had to go through a background check. They obviously would have gone through divorce records and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So there were people who began to know. And it's also obvious that people who knew started sitting on it. We don't know exactly who they are. There are a lot of rumors about people up on the Hill who knew things and sat on it. But today the president came out and said he only learned for the first time yesterday. That's either a huge lie or it represents gross mismanagement in the White House or perhaps both.
So let me ask you about that, because an administration official told us that Shanahan was fully vetted, that the White House was aware of the domestic abuse allegations, but not every single detail. But to your point, President Trump was asked about it today. And Shanahan, here's what he said.
I had heard about it yesterday for the first time. I didn't know about it. I had heard about it yesterday. And it's very unfortunate.
To your point, for that to be true, it would mean that people at the White House, whatever they knew, they didn't share with the president. Or the president is lying.
Exactly. And frankly, it's just impossible to believe they wouldn't bring it to him. I mean, this is not the first time they've gone through violence and domestic relations in which they haven't picked up on it and done something about it. You know, the red flags would start flying immediately once you started looking at this file. So I have to believe they started talking to the president about it. He doesn't let anything go on in there that's of importance, not go by him. So I have to believe he did it. I don't know why he's lying about it. But he's also left his staff looking like, why the hell didn't you tell him? Well, if what he's saying is true, why did you not tell him? And what about other people? I mean, it is You know, the Washington Post found a lot of details much more rapidly and published them tonight, much more rapidly than people have been studying this for 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, something about it certainly doesn't add up. Thank you very much.
It doesn't add up.
David Gergen, obviously much more to come on that as we find out who knew what and when and what the president knew. And next, the president about to formally launch his 2020 campaign. The theme, promises made, promises kept. What about this one?
I promise we're building the wall and Mexico will pay for the wall. I promise.
Anthony Scaramucci is out front. And Jeannie on vintage Trump and his reading list.
I really like Tom Wolfe's last book, and I think he's a great author. He's done a beautiful job.
Which book?
His current book. His current book. It's just out.
Live pictures out of Florida on your screen. President Trump about to formally kick off his reelection campaign for 2020. That is Orlando. One campaign source telling CNN Trump sees tonight as a chance to, quote, reset the race. His supporters trying to fire up his base in a state that he won by about one percentage point in 2016, about 112,000 votes, as tight as it can get there. Will that be enough to overcome Democrats, though, who are determined to turn Florida blue again? Ed Lavandera is on the ground.
Pop that horn.
The 2020 presidential election is about a year and a half away, and Melody Vincent is celebrating President Trump's recent birthday, leading cheers on a street corner. It's never too early to fire up the base.
I am a Trumper. Trump has come in and stepped up when he didn't have to for free and saved our country.
Vincent was one of several dozen Trump supporters who turned out to generate a happy hour honking frenzy in this intersection of the Villages enclave north of Orlando. It's a good place to take the temperature of the Trump faithful, who often sound just like the president's Twitter feed.
Look at what he's done for the economy. In the last 2.5 years, he has done more than any president in my lifetime.
The Villages is a sprawling retirement community where more than 115,000 retirees now live. And Republicans outnumber Democrats by more than 2-1. It's often called a Disney World for adults, where the Hot Wheels of choice are golf carts. And evenings end with concerts on the square. Mike Peacock runs a golf cart rental business. He says he sees his neighbors talking Trump every night and says support for the president is stronger than ever. They love what most of the president's detractors despise.
I like him because he's sarcastic and I'm the same way.
The devotion to President Trump is so intense here that a recent meeting of the Village Republicans started out with a prayer asking God to, quote, deliver President Trump from the evil that is bent on destroying him. Do you worry that President Trump's divisiveness, his lies, is going to hurt him in the long run?
I don't think so, because you'd have to tell me what he's lied about, first of all. I don't think he's lied about anything. And as far as
you don't think he's lied about anything?
No.
Democrats organized this protest rally just a few blocks away from where President Trump is hosting his reelection campaign kickoff. Wes Hodge is the chairman of the Orange County Democratic Party in Orlando. He says Trump's divisiveness is waking up a new wave of voters.
I think there's more excitement on our side because people now understand that every single vote's going to matter and that we, you know, some people were like, no, you can't win in 2016. And now that we've seen what's happened, people are energized like never before.
A new Quinnipiac University poll does show early signs of potential trouble for Trump in Florida. In the poll, the president is trailing Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren in this crucial battleground state, while three other Democratic hopefuls are running neck and neck.
Enough is enough.
Maria Reveyes moved to Orlando from Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. She dismisses the intensity of support from Trump's base and argues Florida is shifting away from the president.
It's not acceptable what is going on under Trump administration, especially for minorities, for Puerto Ricans, and that's why we're here today.
And Aaron, if you talk polls with any Trump supporter, they will tell you they are incredibly dismissive of anything that shows President Trump behind in any kind of polls. They look back to 2016 and like to claim that none of the polls were right back then. And they don't think that so far they're showing what they see on the ground out here, Aaron.
All right. Thank you very much, Ed Lavandera. And now, former White House Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci. And Anthony, look, and obviously you're joining us. Everyone should see, just because I see the background, from Rome tonight, where they're watching this race as closely, probably, as we all are. But look, Florida, a crucial swing state. The president there, of course, he won it by a percentage point. Ed points out rightly, Fox News and everybody else's polls did not show that on the eve of the election. Nonetheless, the president is looking at polls now that show him losing to Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders handily. How worried are you about Democratic enthusiasm for turnout in Florida?
Well, listen, it's I think we would all accept that it's very early, and we could point to people like Howard Dean that had huge leads at this point and so on and so forth. So yeah. I am a little more worried than I would be in 2016 because the president is not a novelty anymore, and he is running on a track record. And so, you know, I've often said on this network and other networks, what the president is doing has been astounding. He's got a great economic record to run on. How he sometimes does it, however, I think is creating a headwind for him. And so what I'm hoping is he goes back to the State of the Union address, that sort of communication style, Aaron. And he uses that over the next 6 to 9 months. I think that would really help him a great deal because it would calm people down. And so for me right now, I would say it is very, very early, but he is no longer a new entity like he was in 2016.
All right. And now nationally, there's a Fox poll, which is interesting because when he tweets about that, he sort of is talking about how he's confused by it, you know, whereas if it came from anybody else, it's fake news. But it's Fox, so he didn't want to call it that. And in the Fox poll, he trails Joe Biden by 9 points. This is nationally, Anthony. Bernie by nine. Bernie Sanders within the margin of error against Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, and Pete Buttigieg. He is pretending that his own internal polls don't show him losing key states, which, of course, all that leaked out, and we know they do show that. Again, this is early, but that's what they show. And he has been clear, of course, as you know, that he loves polls and only good polls and everything else he ignores. Here he is.
I love those polls when they're good. Now, if they're no good, I don't report them.
The Los Angeles Times has a 6 points up nationwide. Good poll. If it weren't, I wouldn't be telling you about it, I promise.
If we're doing badly, I don't know about polls. No, it's true. When we do badly, I don't know about polls, right? But when we're doing well, I know about polls.
Okay, laughing aside, do you think he realizes that he has headwinds and that he needs to start moving?
I do. And I would say that he had headwinds in 4 years ago when he launched the campaign and he was 22 points behind Jeb Bush. And so, yeah, he absolutely has headwinds. The reason I'm laughing is, like Steve Jobs and most entrepreneurs, they create this reality distortion field around themselves and they try to will themselves to the reality that they want. And so in the case of the president last time, there was a lot of mixed polls, Aaron. We both know that.
Yep.
Maybe the LA Times had a good poll and Rasmussen had a good poll, but there were a lot of really negative polls leading up until Election Day. And so I think the president is going to pick and choose the polls that he likes. That's obvious. Well, he did that before. But the real question is, will he be able to turn things on in a way and close the gap in the polls that you're looking at and the polls that I'm looking at?
All right.
I predict that he will, because he just has such a very strong economy to run on.
All right. One thing, though, he's running on, right, and his whole thing is promises made, promises kept. And certainly he has plenty of those. One of the first, though, and the biggest, and certainly the most often made to this entire country that nobody could ever forget is this one.
I will build a great, great wall on our southern border, and I will have Mexico pay for that wall. Yeah. Mark my words.
I promise we're building the wall, and Mexico will pay for the wall. I promise.
In the end, Mexico's paying for the wall. They're going to pay for the wall, and they're going to enjoy it, okay?
Does he think not keeping that promise actually helps him as a rallying call?
Well, I would say that he would look at it probably. I think the part of the narrative is going to be that he's been trying to keep that promise. And you may remember prior to the midterms, he was trying to cut a deal on the Dreamers, the whole DACA situation, to get border funding for the wall. Now, that would have came from the United States and the taxpayer, of course. So right. I think it's a hard promise for him to keep. But I think he can go down a list of things. And unfortunately, he's in the political world now. And a lot of things that you sometimes promise you can't quite meet. But there's a whole list of promises, Aaron, that he has been able to keep. And one of them is wage growth. So you have an interesting situation. You have real GDP growth, very low inflation. But for the bottom 10% of earners, you've got about a 5.4% wage increase since he became president. And I hope he runs on that. I think that's the right narrative for the run on. But you're right, and I'll cede that to you. He has not been able to make that promise. But there is a whole host of other promises that he's come in on, which I think his base certainly likes.
Well, you know what? I have to say, I appreciate the fact that I coughed and you didn't try to end the interview because... there was a moment the other day where the president was doing an interview and his chief of staff started coughing. And, well, here's what happened.
But at some point, I hope they get it because it's a fantastic financial statement. It's a fantastic financial statement. And let's do that over. He's coughing in the middle of my answer.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like that, you know?
Your chief of staff.
If you're going to cough, please leave the room.
Get a shot of, and I'll come over here.
You just can't.
Just to change the shot.
Okay.
Sorry, Mr. Trump.
And no doubt you've seen his facial expression. Okay. Does behavior like that from him, from the top, send a message about how he treats people or how others should treat people, or do you not have any concern?
I sort of think it's unfair. Every one of us have been temperamental from time to time. There's a scene where Bill Clinton is sort of yelling at an aide 20 years ago. We've known President Obama sometimes has lost his temper. I think it's just very unfair to pick and choose. He's clearly caught on camera. We're in the world of social media now. Many of us have said things that they've regretted saying, myself included, especially Aaron. And so, but what happens in our social media and our fishbowl, and the White House isn't really even a fishbowl, it's a full-blown aquarium. And so they caught him frustrated. He's a total germaphobe. I've seen it full picture. God forbid you lick your finger and touch something on his desk and flip out on you. And so I get the fact that he was upset there, but I think people look at that and say, okay, high stress job. He's a little frustrated.
But should he talk to his chief of staff like that? I mean, putting aside jokes about, you know, germs, I'm sure Mick Mulvaney covered his mouth and the germs weren't going 20 feet or, but I mean, is it okay to talk to him like that?
In that setting, no, I understand that, Aaron. And I would say in that setting, many of us that have worked with him and know the whole germaphobe thing, some of that is an act on his part and that sort of frustration that he gives out. But I hear you. It was a bad look for the president. But at the end of the day, you know, I enjoyed working for him. Many people enjoy working for him. But in a job like that, I think it's impossible to expect a person to have zero defects and no frustration at any time. But I do see that. But I would challenge people that are listening to the show or people in your control room, have they never lost their temper about something? My guess is they probably have.
Yes. I just hope it wouldn't be someone coughing in the middle of an interview across the room who's supposed to be your right-hand person. All right. Thank you very much, Anthony. Good to talk to you.
The good news is I'm about 8,000 miles away, so I can't get any of your germs.
Believe me, you would not want them. Believe me. Thank you. And next, President Trump says he's going to start deporting millions of people next week. So what will cities do if he follows through on that threat? The mayor of Oakland, who's had a running feud with Trump on immigration, is out front. Plus, bullets fly past a photographer who was feet away from a heavily armed gunman. Tonight, that photographer who ran towards the shots is speaking out.
If he saw me sitting there with a camera, he would, I have no doubt he would have shot me.
New tonight, President Trump doubling down on his promise to start mass deportations of millions of people next week, even though a senior immigration official tells CNN there are no plans to do so.
Immigration officials say they don't know anything about a planned roundup of millions of people next week.
Well, they know, and they're going to start next week. And when people come into our country and they come in illegally, they have to go out. And everybody's seeing that.
Out front now, the mayor of Oakland, Libby Schaff. And I appreciate your time, Mayor. Good to have you back on the show. So the president doubling down, saying he's going to go ahead and do this, going to start next week, round up of millions of people. Do you think he'll follow through on his threat?
Well, Aaron, it's just more of his ruthless, reckless, and racist behavior. And this kind of mass rounding up of people is where civil liberties get violated. This administration's continued cruelty, separating families, placing children in cages, that is not my America, and I find it deeply disturbing, and I know that my residents here in Oakland share that view.
So Oakland is a sanctuary city. What will you do if the president goes through with his plan?
Well, in the past, I have warned my residents, but obviously the president has done that for me, so I'm not going to need to do that in this case. But my message is to not panic, but to be prepared. Everyone should know their rights and their responsibilities. And that is kind of the message for everyone. This president continues to try and distract us with his fear-mongering, with his divisive rhetoric. And we really need to hold him accountable for fixing what is clearly a broken immigration system.
So as you say, you don't need to warn your residents because he has already. Obviously, he's essentially announced an operation. Last year, though, he came out aggressively against you, threatened to prosecute you for doing the same thing in Oakland. Here he is.
How about the mayor of Oakland, where she tells 1,000 people to get going? Law enforcement's coming to get you. And this was all planned, and many of them scattered.
What she did is incredible and very dangerous from the standpoint of ICE and Border Patrol. It's very dangerous.
I mean, you talk about obstruction of justice. I would recommend that you look into obstruction of justice for the mayor of Oakland, California, Jeff.
So, Mayor, now he's doing what you did, announcing his plans to deport people who are here illegally. Is he being hypocritical?
I do find it a little ironic. But, you know, he's getting ready to announce his reelection bid. So clearly he's trying to whip up his base at the expense of good, peaceful citizens and communities like mine that pride ourselves on our diversity, our inclusion. And let me be clear, being a sanctuary city is fully legal. We are not breaking laws. We are not impeding the federal government. We are just using our local resources where we think it is much more appropriate.
All right. So that's a fair point. I want to ask you about what a senior administration official, senior immigration official, I'm sorry, Mayor Schaff, told us today. This person said, quote, there is no operation next week to pick up millions, right? Contradicting the president, but adds there are tentative plans for an operation next month in 10 cities. And they specify that these operations would be to pick up families who did not show up to their scheduled immigration hearings and have removal orders, right, that they've ignored. So my question to you is, do you think it's wrong to pick up an entire family and deport them if they skipped their hearing, didn't show up, and have removal orders that they've ignored?
We have a system of laws, and we have to have a functional immigration system. But we really aren't exercising what should be, for example, political asylum exceptions, true due process, if we don't provide representation for these families. When you are a mayor, you live in your community. You know these individuals. Their children go to school with your children. You sit next to them in church. You might remember the story of the incredible emergency room nurse at our public hospital who also worked with cancer patients and heart patients for decades, trying to get her legal status, but unsuccessful, and happily was able to return now under an H-1B visa. And that's only because she got the attention that got her the support she needed. So again, we say we have a fair and just immigration system. We have ample evidence to show that we do not. And while we have this broken system, we cannot terrorize good people that have been living in our communities, contributing, and really don't deserve to be ripped from their families, ripped out of the communities that they've called home. We need to fix this system, not use it as political volleyball.
All right, Mayor Schaaf, thank you very much. And next, the newspaper photographer who captured this chilling photo speaks out. Out front tonight, face-to-face with a gunman, a longtime photographer for the Dallas Morning News, finding himself in the middle of the story, just feet away from a heavily armed man shooting up a federal building in Dallas. Diane Gallagher is out front.
I was just praying that he couldn't see me. If he would have saw me, he would have shot me. No doubt.
That terrifying scene as a 22-year-old Army veteran, heavily armed and seemingly dressed for battle, opened fire outside the federal building and courthouse in downtown Dallas.
I heard three pops, thinking it was just some backfire from a car. After the third shot, I knew it wasn't.
Dallas Morning News photographer Tom Fox was standing outside waiting to photograph a defendant arriving for jury selection when the bullets started flying.
I noticed somebody on the sidewalk near the corner, so when I didn't know what it was, so I just pulled up a long lens and looked through the viewfinder and saw the muzzle of the gun and the guy with the mask on.
Fox snapped this chilling photo of the gunman, Brian Isaac Clyde.
I just went into, okay, this is my job, this is what I've been doing for almost 30 years. Just stay close to the story, but not in danger.
But then realized he needed to take cover.
I got to get out of the harm's way. He's coming this way. I didn't want to be shot in the back, and so I just ducked into the first alcove.
Cell phone video filmed by Tim Brown from his apartment just across the street shows Fox just a few feet from Clyde during those chaotic moments.
I'm in plain sight, and if he saw me sitting there with a camera, I have no doubt he would have shot me.
Federal Protective Service officer shot and killed Clyde before he ever got a chance to go into the building or hurt anyone.
Think about friends. You think about things that are important to you. This is not the way I want to go.
And look, hiding behind something like this, along with that quick response from those federal officers, is likely what helped save Tom. Now, the FBI just within the past hour announced that the building here, it is safe. We're up next to it. Still a lot of broken glass, bullet holes you can see just about everywhere. There's still blood stains on the ground, Aaron. What they are asking for, though, is help. If you got video, if you got pictures, please submit them to the FBI.
All right. Thank you very much, Diane. Pretty incredible story. And next, Jeannie unearths Trump and the Book Club. Here's Jeannie.
At 448 pages, the Mueller report isn't exactly a beach read. Doth President Trump protest too much, saying he read it?
The report said no collusion.
Did you read the report?
Yes, I did, and you should read it too.
Come on, let's go.
You should read it too, George.
From the limo to the Oval, the president insisted.
Just read it.
To me, please, because I haven't read it.
Seems like the president is always in the crossfire over his literary habits. This 1987 clip has resurfaced.
Who are your favorite authors?
Well, I have a number of favorite authors. I think Tom Wolfe is excellent.
Did you read Vanity of the Bonfires?
I did not.
The bonfire of the vanities ended up burning Trump when he contradicted himself seconds later.
What's the best book you've read beside Art of the Deal?
I really like Tom Wolfe's last book.
Bonfire of the Vanities.
Yes. The man has done a very, very good job. And I really can't hear with this earphone, by the way.
Reminded me of Sarah Palin. Read one tweet when she was asked what newspapers she reads.
All of them. Any of them.
As for the best of all books, according to Trump.
And nobody loves the Bible more than I do.
Nothing beats the Bible. Not even The Art of the Deal. Not even close.
Just don't ask for details.
I'm wondering what one or two of your most favored Bible verses are.
Well,
and why.
I wouldn't want to get into it because to me that's very personal.
President Trump may not read books, but he definitely recommends them. When Judge Pirro published Liars, Leakers, and Liberals, Trump tweeted, "Go get it." He called a Rush Limbaugh book a must read. At least you must when it comes to the top pick of the Trump Book Club.
The Bible.
The good book gets a thumbs up. He can't put it down. Not the Bible, the thumb. Jeannie Mose, CNN, New York.
And thanks so much for joining us. Anderson starts now.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.